Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As less than 50% of the world's population now, due to the war against women in the forms of domestic violence and collateral damage by the war machines, and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, and economic arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the KKFI staff, management, board, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project. Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart with Ebony Johnson, and Marvita Oliver was here a few minutes ago. I'm sure she will be rejoining us. And I want to announce that Amy Bell is on sabbatical and will be rejoining us probably in late July, if not sooner. And our guest today is Dave Kingsley, who is a retired professor from KU, and actually I think still working on a research project there with KU, and a social activist, social justice activist, and expert in many, many topics, particularly the Social Security plight, and that is self-imposed by our U.S. government. Again, an opinion here, but pretty factual opinion, I believe. And then the healthcare crisis where we are, or lack thereof. So we'll be talking with him in a few minutes. And meantime, we're going to go to Ebony for some news today.
Thank you, Sharon. In her new book, How to Make White People Laugh, Iranian-American comic Najin Farshad describes performing before an audience of several hundred people in Tucson, Arizona. When a group of Middle Eastern women dressed in hijabs rose from their seats and walked out in protest, she says they found her jokes about dating and sexuality, quote, shameful. They wanted to hurt me, you know, and I was hurt by it, she explains. That kind of thing really sucks, I'm not going to lie. But as Farshad explains in her memoir, those female audience members had stayed put in their seats when the male comic before her had talked about looking at pornography as a teenager. It was a great bit, and no one in the audience left, she writes. It wouldn't be surprising to me if these Muslims felt that jokes were best served with a side of penis. Farshad admits in a chapter entitled, My Own People Don't Like Me Very Much, that her most heartbreaking opposition has come from my own people. But she seems to have come to grips with those who find her humor inappropriate. She doesn't flinch when she describes how an Iranian woman in another audience called her a whore. It's sort of giving us a chance to reflect on how we're treating each other within the Muslim community, as well as how we are being treated as Muslims, she said. You can't assume support just because you share a background, she writes. After every instance of my own people not liking me very much, the folks that call me a whore, the hate mail, the death threats, the walkouts, I pick myself up, dust myself off, and reapply some moisturizer. PRI reported June 2nd. Some politicians and advocates at the recent World Humanitarian Summit in Istanbul highlighted the goal of improving access to sexual and reproductive health care in crisis as essential to the disaster planning process, calling for the prioritization, politically and financially, of sexual and reproductive health and rights in crisis response. Sexual and reproductive health is as essential as food, water, and shelter. It is not optional, said Natasha Stott Dispoja, Australia's ambassador for women and girls, at one of the summit's side events. Scaling up sexual and reproductive services and protection measures during emergencies saves lives, empowers women, and expedites the recovery of affected communities and economies from the crisis, she says. The UN summit, the first of its kind, drew 9,000 people from 173 countries on May 23rd through 25th, including 55 heads of state and government, non-governmental organizations, and others. Delegates focused on global reforms to better protect and assist people affected by crisis. The number, frequency, and poverty of emergencies that we're confronted with today is unprecedented, 60 million forcibly displaced people in a year alone, said Rajat Khosa, a human rights advisor at the World Health Organization, during the side event. He went on to say, "We also know that these people are likely to remain in the situation of displacement from anything between 17 to 20 years. The UNFPA committed to reach 40 million people by 2017 with sexual and reproductive health information and services, and gender-based violence prevention and response services in crisis, while UNICEF will conduct real-time gender-based violence risk mapping." IPPF, meanwhile, said in a report released last week that it will provide 1.5 billion services by 2022 in preparing for and responding to humanitarian emergencies. UN Women said it will lead efforts to ensure that by 2020, at least 15% of funding for humanitarian action is devoted to interventions targeting gender equality and women's and girls' empowerment. From 2012 to 2013, just 0.4% of all funding to fragile states went to women's groups or women's ministries, even though women and girls are 14 times more likely to die in a disaster than men. It's hoped these efforts will further address the inadequacy of sexual and reproductive health care during crisis, Women's E! News reported June 3rd. I am the greatest. Boxer, activist, and champion Muhammad Ali died late Friday at the age of 74, according to a statement from his family. Rest in peace, Muhammad.
Thank you, Ebony. Interesting that middle piece was a perfect segue into our guest, Dave Kingsley. I think I picked up the statement that healthcare is as essential as food and water. And just amazing. Again, I'm just struck by the serendipity and the way our show just sort of comes together.
Synchronizes.
It's synchronicity. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's the word. The synchronicity of the whole thing. It's just amazing. So let me introduce Dave Kingsley, who is our guest today, a returning guest and a wonderful advocate for the Kansas City community. He does so much work, and he's an expert in so many topics, but he's going to talk to us today about his advocacy work for basically a single care healthcare system that could be called Medicare for All. It's a wonderful program, as far as I'm concerned, and certainly we know that the Affordable Care Act, known slurringly as Obamacare, has not been serving people so well for the last year or so. Dave, let me hand it off to you.
Well, you know, thank you for having me today, Sharon. And as Ebony was talking about reproductive health care, I was thinking about how we think of health care in America as medical care. Mm-hmm. And medical care is really a small part of health care, mm-hmm. although we're spending the bulk of our money on medical delivery. And I think we have to begin to step back and take a look at what's happening to the health of Americans. We have had an anti-government idea that the free market will take care of it. If we just turn the healthcare system over to the market, that people will go on to the market and make good decisions. Unfortunately, we cut back government funding for health care. I'm talking about public health. I'm talking about reproductive health. Any aspect of health care you can think of. And what's happened is we're seeing a deterioration in the health of the American population, about half of the American population. I'm talking about the lower income half. We've seen, for instance, for at least two decades now, although it's becoming more and more an item in the news, that whites with a high school education or less have actually lost life expectancy. We know that we have twice the infant mortality rate in the United States than they have in European countries, Japan, the Asian countries. So I think where I'm coming from is when we look at the Affordable Care Act, which was supposed to take care of our health care, it really hasn't done that. And the reason it hasn't done that is that it was really an example of the industry going to our government and dictating what our health care policy is going to be, which is funneling money to them. We'll be funneling $2 trillion to the health insurance industry over the next 10 years. That will not benefit our health care.
And you mentioned that the salaries of these industry, the pharma industry or healthcare industry, had significantly increased.
That's right. About a week ago, the New York Times reported the top 200 corporations in America and the CEO salaries. The highest increases in CEO salary have come in the health insurance industry. We have basically five health insurance companies that have 83% of the health insurance market. And when you have that kind of collusion or oligopoly, you're going to see prices increase. Now, as I said earlier, we'll be funneling about $2 trillion over the next 10 years of government funding into the health insurance industry. And we could spend a whole show just talking on what that means. But when you look at companies like Anthem, Aetna, Humana, Cigna, and there's four of the biggest right there. Their CEO pay, let's take Humana and Anthem, Cigna, their CEO pay was around $17 million. Now, why is that important? Well, that's some of the highest CEO pay in America. And what's happened is we're saying to American people, you will pay for this health insurance, even though that is going to benefit a private corporation and their executives at a rate that's phenomenal. I mean, $17 million a year in compensation. Their stock value has increased. Their revenues have increased. So it's been very good for the health insurance industry and as well as for the pharmaceutical industry. Let me tell you a little quick story. When we were negotiating Obamacare, and I know calling it Obamacare is somewhat of a misnomer because this was a conservative idea. And President Obama knew that if he was going to get any universal health coverage, he was going to have to go with a conservative idea to get that through. And once he got it, of course, he was attacked by the right wing because they just want to attack him. But during the negotiations, the Chamber of Commerce and American Health Insurance Plans, which is the industry trade group for the insurance industry, had a fund of $80 million ready to go. If the plan didn't come out the way they wanted it, they were then going to kill the whole idea of Obamacare. Now, think about that. We have an industry or a sector, which is health insurance sector, that is so affluent that they have eight lobbyists for every member of Congress. They spend four times as much on lobbying as the defense sector. Now, most people aren't aware of that the health insurance sector spends four times as much on lobbying as the defense sector. So what happened was we got a plan in the Affordable Care Act that was really beneficial to the industry, but not so beneficial to the American public. Now, in addition to that, we said to the American public, you will buy this health insurance or you will be penalized. You will be charged negligent and you will pay on your income taxes. So if you are not purchasing health insurance under the Affordable Care Act, you are in violation of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we have to begin to talk about. We are being forced as citizens to buy a product that is way overpriced, and that's what we're seeing happening is insurance premiums are increasing at a rather rapid rate. Mm-hmm. In some states, they're going up 27%, 30%. The insurance industry is going to the state insurance commissioners and asking them to increase premiums. We're seeing higher deductibles and so forth.
Thank you, Dave.
I can hear your pen. Your pen clicking. Sorry. I was trying to make a note.
Oh, he was, you know, this radio thing when we're trying to keep silent.
Sign language.
And I'm breaking in here because, as everyone who's been listening today and yesterday knows, this is our beginning of our spring fun drive for asking donors, contributors, listeners to dig into their pockets and figure out what it is about KKFI that's important to you and make a commitment to make a pledge to KKFI.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to thank Susanna Brunn with Gilded for making every woman a part of her contribution. I received a note from her that she contributed and she mentioned our show as well. So thank you for that, Susanna with Gilded.
Great, thank you. And we've got here with us Ebony Johnson, who is relatively new to KKFI and to Every Woman. And we have Marvita Oliver, who I'm not sure quite how long. We've kind of sucked her into the show here recently. She's been hanging around KKFI for a little while. And I started here in 1995 as a volunteer because I knew a woman named Joan Flaherty who hosted a show called Working Women. And so I thought, well, I'll go down there and volunteer. And I came down during a pledge drive and partook of the food and answered the telephone and did what it is volunteers do during a pledge drive. And then Joan asked me to join her on Working Women. And I did. And then there were a couple of other women that helped with that show. And one by one, they all left, found other things to do, or family commitments took over their lives. And I was left with a radio show, never having intended to be a radio host, furthest thing from my mind. But I felt like it was a worthwhile endeavor to host a woman's show and talk about the issues that women and their families face. Yeah. And so I have stuck with this for 21 years now and have brought along excellent people like Ebony and Amy and Marvita and Molly Postlewaite and Pritchett has helped us with the show, Elaine Giesel, Alexis Burdick years back, Victoria Dixon. I mean, there have just been a host of women who've helped out with this show. And we're pretty open down here. If you think you'd like to help out with a radio show, come see Every Woman at 2 o'clock some Saturday afternoon, and you just might find yourself on the air, too. But this is just a wonderful outlet for me because it's so important to bring voices of women and men who are working to make lives better for women and men and their families on the air at KKFI. I think that we aren't muzzled down here. We get to say and talk about the issues we want to talk about. We listen to our listeners who send us ideas for guests. Anybody who wants to jump in here anytime, just jump right in. Ebony said to me, why don't you say what you told my mother? At some time ago when I became an activist, I realized that I didn't come to this planet to be liked. I came here to make a difference. And it is my hope that this show, Every Woman, makes a difference in women's lives. And that's what makes it worthwhile for me to keep coming back down here week after week after week and being on the air and bringing guests on that have things to share that are valuable. We hear good feedback from past shows. And we're asking you now to vote with your telephone call or go online. The phone number is 888-931-0901 or donate online at kkfi.org. And do it now. It's important. It's important that we hear your voice in your donation at KKFI.
And that number again is 888-931-0901. And thanks for sharing your story, Sharon, on how you've been here at KKFI and found, maybe it's a part of finding a voice and cultivating and having a voice as a feminist, and this being an opportunity and outlet for you to do so. I appreciate you mothering me into the process. So thank you so much, and thank you to everyone who is calling in and giving their support and who has done so for the past 20 plus years that we've been here for 27 years on the air. So thank you everybody for doing that. So
Going back, let's get back to Dave, and I hope we've left you in a good spot there to continue on.
Well, you know, before we started the show, Ebony brought up something that I think we could talk about a little bit, which is who's really responsible for health. Is it us as individuals, what we eat, how we exercise, and so forth, or is it the government? And before we talk about that, let's just look at, we spend 2 to 3 times per capita for health care in the United States as our peer countries, whether it's Japan or whether it's Sweden, and yet we have a worse life expectancy. And we have some of the most advanced medical technologies you can imagine. So, you know, I think a lot about who is responsible for health. And I would say it's both the individual and the government. And let's look at some history there. If we take cigarette smoking and lung cancer, it took the U.S. government to do a campaign. And I think government has a really important role in terms of what we eat. And I'm not talking now about regulating all the toxic substances that we're bombarded with, but just look at our health in terms of processed foods, of smoking, and the impact that those have. Of course, if I choose to smoke, that's a choice I make. But we do know that due to government efforts, you know, putting warnings on cigarette packs, the smoking laws that we've passed on smoking in public, we've reduced the incidence of smoking to about 20% of our population. And indeed, we've seen lung cancer drop. So I would like to know what our listeners think, who's responsible, and what Ebony thinks about that, because I think she made a good point.
We could ask our listeners to call in on the air and comment on that. Our online number is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. And then maybe after they talk to us online, they'll want to call the donate line at 888-931-0901. Did you have something you wanted to say, Barbita?
Yes. When you talk about the things that have happened in healthcare and who's responsible, the government or the individual, it's really gone out to even beyond the government into the corporate world as well, because now where before there was a time when you could go into a building and smoke inside of a building, and that's not happening anymore, at least not much anyway. And even restaurants were late to come to add into that. They would have smoking areas, but now most restaurants have no smoking as well. So, and then the last one that really sort of made an impression on my mind was when one of the drug store companies decided to stop selling cigarettes.
Yeah.
To me, that was like, okay, now you really mean it, because I know that that was a big impact on your bottom line. But you decided to take a stand and say, we're not selling cigarettes in a pharmaceutical, you know, in a drugstore environment. So it is more than the individual. I agree with that, because I think the community as a whole, when we join in to saying what we want, then we're able to do things as a whole that impacts more people. people or more legislation than we are as individuals. And so I'm glad to see some of the things that have happened anyway, at least with, you know, cigarette smoking and things like that.
And I think, too, there are a lot of things we don't have control over. I'm sorry, Sharon, you were going to say?
No, I was just going to say, I read your paper that you sent me, and you mentioned people, particularly libertarians, saying, well, the Constitution doesn't guarantee health care. And you had an answer for that, and I hope I haven't put you on the spot.
Oh, no, you haven't at all. You know, that's a good point. John Mackey, for instance, head of Whole Foods, who's a libertarian. I happen to argue with libertarians a lot. And he said the Constitution doesn't say anything about health care. No, but the Constitution says that the government can give us health care, that it's whatever they think is necessary and proper, and we have Supreme Court cases that will support what I'm saying. But John Mackey failed to realize that he had given his employees at Whole Foods health care, a good government or a good employer-sponsored health care program, which is subsidized by the federal government. A lot of people don't realize that employee benefits, i.e. health care, grew out of World War II when we had wage controls. The corporations couldn't give increases in wages, but they could provide health care. And so they would say to their employees, look, we can't give you a wage increase, but we'll provide you a health insurance program. But the government has subsidized that through tax deductions for the corporations. So that's really government-provided health care. And back to and segueing off of libertarianism and anti-government, there are a lot of things that we have no control over in terms of what we consume. Let's take water. If the children in Flint, Michigan, or the adults for that matter, are drinking water that's got lead, that's very damaging to our health. Or let's look at the neighborhood around us. If the cities neglect a neighborhood, the stresses, a lot of environmental issues around that, the neighborhood has no control over this. They don't have the power, they don't have the money to clean that up. So there are those areas where we don't have control over what goes into our bodies. In 1972, the government or Congress passed the Toxic Substances Control Act, which was supposed to control the environmental toxins that are created through different kinds of chemicals, commercial chemicals. That's been weakened considerably, as has the Food and Drug Administration been weakened considerably. Again, I think we have to always go back to where we've arrived in 2016, and that's what I say in my paper. How did we get here in 2016? And we have to look at the power of industry now to lobby. We have a very corrupt system of government, as I pointed out. 8 lobbyists for every legislator.
And that's just the pharmaceutical industry.
No, that's the healthcare sector.
That's the healthcare sector, yeah.
That's hospitals, pharmaceuticals. A good example of what happened in the last year, when we passed the Affordable Care Act, we had a tax. It included a tax on medical device manufacturers like Medtronic, Johnson & Johnson. That tax went away during the last legislative session because of the power of the medical device industry. Two of the people who led the attack on that tax, which is going to help pay for the Affordable Care Act, was Elizabeth Warren and Al Franken. Two of the most liberal members of Congress, but they have huge, powerful medical device manufacturing industries in their state. I think that's where we're at.
We do have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Tell us your name and where you're from. Hi.
My name is Brett, born and raised in the Kansas City area. Pleasure to talk with you today.
Thanks for calling in, Brett. What's your question or comment?
Did we lose
Brett,
it?
Brett, did we lose you?
Well, maybe he'll call back.
I don't hear a dial. I think he may. Brent, you're still on with us. Oh. If you can hear us, we can't hear you, though. It's silent. I think he's calling back. Let's see.
Okay.
We'll transfer that. But We're actually... Is he... Okay. I think we have him back. Brent, are you there?
So then you're saying that when they took that tax away, then that cut into the funding that was going towards health care?
That's right.
And that was a substantial piece then?
Yes.
And I think we have Brent here now. Brent, are you there?
I am. My apologies
thanks
for that.
Thanks for calling back. Go ahead with your question or comment.
So I came in partway through this conversation. I don't know if you've already addressed this yet or not, but I'm very keen on what your gentleman was saying there about chemicals. So the government has done what it can to introduce new legislation to limit the amount of places that people can smoke and certain other legislation. Communities have spoken up and said, this is where we want there to be no smoking bans and campuses and such around the United States. Now, the only people that have left to respond to this are the cigarette manufacturers. I think it's time for them to step up and be responsible and say, you know, we're going to start limiting the random hundreds of chemicals that we place in our tobacco, because we can do things individually, as communities, with our government, but it really comes back as well to the manufacturers themselves.
You know, thank you, Brett, for that comment, but let me tell you this. The cigarette manufacturers won't do anything they're not forced to do.
Right.
Right now, in Eastern Europe, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has teamed up with the major cigarette manufacturers to fight regulation in those countries like Romania, Hungary, et cetera, the newer, used-to-be democracies are becoming less so. So they're going to fight any regulation. They won't do anything that's going to decrease their profits. We've had to fight tooth and nail. I know I was involved in that in some of the earlier fights over secondhand smoke and getting it out of the bars and the restaurants and public buildings. So, you know, I think we're just going to have to continue to fight the idea that government has no role to play.
Right.
Well, thank you so much again for calling in, Brendan. We appreciate you listening and participating with us.
You're very welcome. Very important topic. I thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And we are going to take a quick break, and we will be back.
When you use your Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or American Express card for your gift of $90 or more when you call our pledge line at 888-931-0901, you will receive an awesome official KKFI t-shirt. For a gift of $150 or more, you can be a guest DJ. You or someone you know can be a radio personality for 1 hour on one of our locally produced music programs. Can't decide? Get them both by giving a gift of $200 or more when you call our pledge line now at 888-931-0901. This is our way of saying thank you. Once again, that number is 888-931-0901. And thanks from 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And Ebony, I would like to ask you to tell us why you're here at KKFI. What is it about KKFI that's important to you?
Well, it's important for me to have a voice, I think, and to know that I have one and to use it and what that means. And for me, I had a personal revelation of maybe, I guess it was last year, earlier last year, my sister, when I turned 35, and my sister said, well, what is it? What have you learned now that you're 35? And I took a pause for a moment, and then it just automatically came. I said, you know, I've realized that I am the love I'm looking for. And all this, you know, through all my relationships, I realized the common denominator is me, and whatever I feel like is missing, maybe that's who I really am. You know, that kind of that piece there. It's not somewhere outside of me or somebody or something else. And so I started writing again and doing a blog, and I came to KKFI and was interviewed about my blog. Actually, I had an opportunity to to speak. And that was really welcoming and important to me, to be able to have a place to go in my own city, in my own community, and share what I felt like was a great personal revelation and really important and empowering at the same time. And then Maria Vasquez Boyd introduced me to you, Sharon, and said, you can come, you know, come join those ladies on Saturdays. They talk about women's issues. And as I was a up and coming feminist that I really didn't pay attention to at first, but I realized I am, Sharon and Amy welcomed me and just embraced me and allowed me to participate in various topics and now start bringing on guests and understand how to, you know, put together a radio program. And so me being a like the last pledge drive, that was the first time I had ever given money to a radio station. And I realized listening to the various types of music that I can't necessarily hear in other places on the radio. Like I really like Donna's reggae, I think it's Roots Rise Reggae. Donna, I hope I'm getting that right. But you know, some tunes that I may not even buy myself per se, but I can hear them if I tune into her show. So I've been really grateful to do that and to have some conversations that I don't necessarily see happening on TV, or, you know, again, music that I may not otherwise hear other places. That's something that I think is a part of a community. It's homegrown. It's what makes it local. It's what makes a place feel good. As we talk about some of these issues that can be very overwhelming and take us back a bit. So for you who's listening and this may be your first time considering pledging or pledging, thank you for going ahead and calling in or going online to give whatever it is you can give to support your own community radio station, because that's what this is. I think, is it 80% of our funds come from you, the giver, the person who's pledging. And so that's what keeps us independent and where we're able to talk about subjects that matter to us, and we're not dictated on which subjects we need to give to according to, like we've talked about, some corporations or the government or what have you. And that number that you can call to give your pledge is 888-931-0901. And again, that number is 888-931-0901. Or you can donate on our website at kkfi.org. And thank you for all of you who are calling in and going online and doing so.
And I would like to thank Dave Kingsley for his contribution. Yes. He is a regular supporter of KKFI and Every Woman. And also, you make a good point about those first-time donors. According to statistics, only 1 in 10 listeners call in a pledge. And it's so important. That leaves a whole lot of people out there who are obviously benefiting and enjoying the programming, but haven't made a commitment to make that phone call and make a pledge. And those people out there in the call room are very pleasant, and they'll be very happy to mm-hmm. talk with you. Very friendly, very nice people. And you can call in right now at 888-931-0901. Make a commitment to support your local community radio station and become involved. Become a member by sending a contribution to KKFI. And don't be intimidated by those large donors' gifts that to give. We gratefully accept any amount of money. So don't think that if you don't have a lot of money to give, you can't give, because that's not true. We will gratefully accept any amount you are able to feel that you can afford. So call in right now at 888-931-0901. Thank you.
All right.
And Dave, can we pick right up in that conversation? There's just so much.
There is something.
I would like to interrupt with one thing. I took that $17 million and divided it by 52 weeks and found out they're making $356,000 a week, or I forgot now what it was daily, but hourly it's $8,000-something an hour if they work a 40-hour week.
Yeah, it's almost the morality of that is hard to fathom. And one thing I hope that we could spend a little time on today is not just American health, but global health.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing a major deterioration across our globe, across the planet in populations. And the reasons for that have to do with economics to a great degree. People are losing their land. They're migrating to cities. We're seeing more and more people packed into cities where diseases – and they're living in poverty. Diseases begin to spread. We're seeing war. The war in the Middle East, in sub-Saharan Africa, this is creating major health problems for people. Poverty. As you know, we've had a more or less of an economic collapse. And when we look at economics, we see corruption where massive amounts of money is being funneled to very small elites in many of the so-called underdeveloped countries. And I think we as Americans have to begin to think about this because these diseases, I mean, we're not really separated by any kind of a wall, you know. And so we're seeing Zika. We're seeing hemorrhagic diseases in sub-Saharan Africa, which we've known about a long time. And the healthcare infrastructure in those countries are very poor. So I wanted to bring that up today. Because we don't live on an island in the United States. We're part of a humanity. And I think the conversations we have in politics these days, let's say during the current campaign, is very much all about us and not about our fellow humans. And really, we don't have time to get into it, but the future of the human species is very fragile. And we're in great jeopardy for a lot of reasons. Climate change, scientists who are being irresponsible with gene editing and so forth. So we really have to begin to talk about who are we as a species and what are we going to do about the future? I'm fairly old, so it's not going to affect me too much. But I look at young people like Ebony and I say to myself, what's your future going to be like? And I'm very interested in you as young people.
I think you, Dave, that makes a good point about just understanding. I think that dichotomy of I am an individual and unique, and I am also a part of a greater community. You know, I'm a part of this. We're a part of the same fabric in a way. And so to kind of playing on that question of, well, who's really responsible for our health care? Is it me or the government or me? And I think I realize me and the government are one and the same. You know, like we keep talking about the government as if it's someone other than us. And it may be a part of us that sometimes we like and we don't like. But we're still a part of the same community, you know. And so how do we work together for what we feel is really our greatest good. And I think with healthcare, I was in a conversation the other night and they just talked about the importance of, even as we're talking about here with community, our relationships, how we treat ourselves, how we treat each other, how we take care of the earth and things of that nature, and allow ourselves to be taken care of as well is something that for me, as I look to the future, is really owning that. Like when I'm not feeling well, it's usually because I have some sort of an issue going on that maybe I'm not dealing with or need to deal with. And that in turn affects my own health, you know? And a lot of our, I feel like health focus goes to, well, what happens when you're going to get sick? As opposed to, which there are some people now of thinking about more and more creative ways of staying well and being well, and that's our natural, a natural way of being. And so for me, it's those conversations that I feel that give me pause and spike my ears a bit, because a lot of people have talked about all this and all that, but we don't have a lot of creative conversations about well-being that I think can be very beneficial for people my age and anyone.
One thing I want to make sure that people understand is that the movement of people across the planet to a better life is being, they have no control over the forces that are creating that migration. Their lives are being affected by, not by what they can choose to do. So I think that's very important. I mean, look at Honduras. Look at Central America. and how that has deteriorated. Honduras, Guatemala, Nicaragua, life is becoming totally unbearable in countries where 30, 40 years ago, life was improving. And now these folks have to leave or they don't survive, so they're going to move north, just like the folks trying to get across the Mediterranean. And I think we have to recognize that these are economic forces and political forces. The war in Syria is something that the folks of Syria have no control over. They're trying to get out. And where are they going to go? They're going to go to Europe. They're going to come, you know, to the United States if it's South America. And so we have a moral issue here. Plus, we're not separated from these folks.
One and the same.
We just got a note from a caller. We want to say thank you to Sue Ellen Freed. Sue Ellen Freed, we just love her so much. She's a woman who is very involved in the community, and she's been on this show.
She was just here a couple of weeks ago. Thank you, Sue Ellen. Thank you so much.
Hello, Sue Ellen.
Everybody in this room knows you, Sue Ellen.
I know Sue Ellen well.
I know. She was one of my first interviews when I was learning how to do podcasting at Johnson County Community College, and I interviewed her about bullying, and I learned so much about how concerned she was about our community and our children and the emotions and the things that are involved with bullying. I thought that was so brave of her and her co-author to attack that subject at the time that she did, because she was attacking it before it was something that people were talking about. So thank you, Sue Ellen. We all give you a shout out.
And Marvita, tell us why you're here at KKFI. Share your story a little bit.
Sure. Well, it goes back to being on the radio. When I was living overseas, I got to have a better appreciation for radio, and that was listening to the BBC and Voice of America and local stations, and it kept me in connection with what was going on in other places besides where I was at the time. And then when I came back to the States and I saw that, as I was taking a student media course, I saw that we had a radio station, an online radio station, and not too many people were taking it seriously. But I was like, man, if I, you know, this was my lifeline.
Yeah.
I could see how something more could happen. But when I came to KKFI, a friend of mine asked me if I could help her out with a show for Ethiopian Connections. And that was Helen Gebremlek. And she asked me to help her with a show. And we did the show. And I just had so much fun. I was like, I got to keep doing this. She sparked my interest again. It was so much fun. So then eventually I got involved with Radioactive Magazine. And I started doing a show called Reviving KC, where we look at renovating homes in the KC neighborhood, in the KC urban core, one home, one neighborhood vibe at a time. And all of this is about the community and how we come to help the community. And that's what KKFI does. We help the community, and the people who listen, they love what we do. You know, so it's easy, I'm sure, for you to connect the dots and to make that call. You know, call in at 888-931-0901 to our pledge line, and you'll get some great people on the other side. They'll take your donation for you. Or you can go to our website at kkfi.org. And when you make a donation, you're supporting all the people who give their time and their passions toward connecting with you, because that's what we're really doing. That's what I feel like I'm doing. I'm connecting with a friend of mine who I know, she loves public radio. And so, hi, I hope you're listening, Lynn. I know she loves it and she gets it. And so for the rest of you who get it, just make that donation at 888-931-0901 and at kkfi.org, and we'll be glad that you made that donation, and thank you very much.
And you'll be glad you made that donation too.
Yeah. It feels good.
It feels good, yes. And now let's get, and that was Marvita Oliver, our newest recruit to Every Woman. And now let's get back to Dave. We've got a few more minutes here. Do we have any?
I'm interested. Dave, I'm interested in what do you, just given your background and your research and your experience in the industry, what do you see as the future of our health care, of what we call health care and the system and government and us as individuals?
You know, that's a great question, Ebony. We know that we can't continue down the path we're on, that the industry power in Washington is going to enhance, and they're going to continue to corrupt the process, which they can do. We, as you know, we have a very corrupt political process in the United States now. It's all about the money. I think the Affordable Care Act, I'm sorry to say, will probably collapse under its own weight. I mean, we had 50 million uninsured people starting out. We only have 12 million now. So there's massive civil disobedience amongst younger people particularly.
12 million of those people are now insured.
That's right.
27 million uninsured.
We had 50 million uninsured starting out. We picked up 12 million under the Affordable Care Act. That leaves tens of millions of uninsured Americans without access to health care out there, some by choice. Mm-hmm. So this is not a plan that's going to work. At some point, we're either going to have to bring everybody under Medicare and control the costs, which we've begun to do. Believe it or not, President Obama did work very hard in passing the Affordable Care Act in bringing some control to the excessive charges under Medicare. We have a long ways to go there. We're still paying way too much for our Medicare, Medicaid services. So I don't know if it's going to be a decade. I doubt if the system in place now can go much longer than a decade without the crisis that we see coming, when we only have three major insurance carriers, which is going to be very soon. They're going to be able to keep raising prices. Their power is over the state insurance commissioners. So look for within a decade that we're going to have to move in another direction.
Is it possible that there'll be some type of innovation in healthcare, like there's innovation in other, like Uber came in and sort of interrupted everything? You think there might be some type of interruption on that level in healthcare, where somebody, some entrepreneur with a different idea can come in and offer a different way of doing things, since we all have a different lifestyle now?
I don't see that happening. I believe that the U.S. government has a responsibility and is the only entity that has the power. If it's a private enterprise that does it, it's going to be about profit for that particular enterprise. I'm not even a big fan of Uber and Lyft, because what they do is they just put a lot of other employees out of work. And that's one of the problems we face coming down the road, is where are we going to employ everybody? And if we don't have jobs, we will be able to do a lot more in healthcare with fewer people. Unfortunately, some of the people that we're not utilizing now in terms of nursing, as hospitals became more and more consolidated, they became about profit, and therefore they're doing more with less people. And that's not good, because we're seeing a lot of problems occur in hospitals in terms of infections and so forth, because we have reduced staff. So I think the American people are going to have to quit believing the narrative that somehow we're going to improve the Affordable Care Act. I don't see that happening.
Do you believe that the financial system and the healthcare system will both need to change, or will both need to, or will both change simultaneously?
Yeah, we're getting to the bigger picture there of what kind of an economic system do mm-hmm. we have. We don't really have a capitalist economic system now. We mm-hmm. have a financialist economic mm-hmm. system. Mm-hmm. It's all mostly about capital, mm-hmm. the money. There's so mm-hmm. much capital that has to flow someplace. So if they can commoditize us as patients, they will do that. And then it's how much money can we make? How much more can we squeeze out of the insurance commissioners? How much more can we squeeze out of the American public, the U.S. government? And that's the trend that we'll be on.
You know, I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and greed did not seem to be so rampant. How did we get to this point of just unmitigated greed? How did this happen? Remember the story about in the 50s, a CEO made 12 times what a line worker made in the plant?
Yeah. I think you're right. I think, and that's seeped into healthcare. It's not about healthcare. It's about profit. And we have to wake up to that and recognize that. When we hear in the campaign that we're going to improve the Affordable Care Act, I can't see that happening.
Well, thank you so much, Dave, for being here, and thank you again to our listeners for tuning in and being a part of the community, as we are a part of you as well. And please stay tuned for with Donna Wolf in Urban Connections, and then coming up later, guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson.
And one more time, that pledge number.
And that pledge number that you can give a call to is 888-931-0901, 888-931-0901, or you can go to kkfi.org. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on, and your contribution as well, financially and in the conversation.